Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back. My name's Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, the only show, I'm pretty sure I didn't Google it, that brings you all the best, the brightest, the strangest films and TV shows available on your, whatever you stream on, really. It could be anything these days. It could be a phone, if you're Andy.
Refrigerator.
Yeah. In an ocean of streaming content vying for your attention, we are your lighthouse, your beacons of broadcast, your curators of content.
We bring it all to you from on high. We bequeath upon you our streaming knowledge.
You're welcome. Insert Moana song later in
You're
post.
Welcome.
Yeah, that was
what
it.
What can I say?
Holy shit.
Oh my God, did Dwayne The Rock Johnson just come in here?
Full on came in here.
Ew.
Ew.
I don't know why.
Clanging and banging in his personal gym that goes with him everywhere.
It's about pain. It's about power. That song he made, it's kind of slaps if you listen to it enough.
Yeah, you told me about it and I never looked it up.
Well, we'll listen to it after we're done recording. It'll hype you. Actually, it'll give me the energy I need. Full disclosure, listener, I slept. Yeah, one listener. I slept 3 hours last night. Nice. We went and saw the new Edgar Wright film and we got home pretty reasonable time. I read my book and watched a little TV and then I laid down. And for some reason, I was struck with insomnia. It could have been the 3 hour nap and the 32 ounce coffee that I drank prior to the movie.
That or you're just scared that if you fell asleep, you'd be transported back into the 1960s, you know, and who wants to live in the 60s?
Which is not my era, right? Especially London. I get why Edgar Wright likes it, but maybe that was the fear. But so anyway, I laid there.
1960s Kentucky.
Yeah. Oh, no. God.
There are trees everywhere. It's dark.
I hate it.
Mitch McConnell's still here.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Well,
I heard you were having a nightmare and I came over to kick you in the dick. Because you're a poor.
Because you're a poor.
Ha, 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 ha. That's how he laughs.
I saw this TikTok. Did you see that clip of Adam Levine, the Maroon 5 guy? This lady jumps on stage and like hugs him and he like shakes it off and storms away all angry.
No, nice. I haven't seen that.
And this one guy made a TikTok with that video playing in the corner and he's like, all right, in his defense, okay, because there had been a lot of defense videos like this isn't consensual, like he didn't, you know, it's a lot of non-consent going on here.
Yeah.
But his defense was like, in his defense, guys, I don't know if you guys are all millionaires, probably not, but do you have any idea what it's like to have a poor person just jump up and touch you? And then someone commented, when I broke out laughing, was when someone commented, no, seriously, though, like, he broke his bubble and didn't have permission to be in his space. And the guy replied, it's so much worse when they're poor. And that's what that reminds me of. And I know this is secondhand TikTok. This is terrible content right now. But I'm just sharing with you guys things that made me chuckle because I didn't sleep last night.
That is a thing you can stream.
It's true.
It's true.
That is true.
I'm usually the sleepy boy of this group, and today I'm not.
Yes.
Ready to rock.
I'm feeling okay. I'm in that weird space where you've just given up on, you know what I mean? Like, I was tired 3 hours ago, but now I've reached a new plane of existence.
Suicidal.
I've become a new person. TW. So tonight's episode, hint, hint, is going to be about Edgar Wright's newest film, Last Night in Soho, which we saw as a trio last night, and we will be discussing that.
Is that any relation to Ruby Soho?
I don't think so.
The Rancid song? No, I'm kidding.
Nice.
No, we don't know
Ruby,
Rancid
Ruby, 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 Ruby Soho.
There we go.
I just saw Rancid buddy. A few months ago.
Yes.
Yeah, suck I know, it. Awesome. They played that song. I got pin drops to that it reference.
It was also Dropkick Murphy, but I got so drunk before Dropkick Murphy that I don't really remember them. So it's just the Rancid show.
That's the Departed guys, right?
Yes.
It's the only thing I know about Dropkick Murphys. Fell asleep and, you know, this is college. So I fell asleep to that DVD menu of the Departed playing. Like that would just play. And I'm too stoned to get up and change it. Everybody's got that DVD menu that just played on as the soundtrack to their lives. Right. And that's mine. Anyhoozle. You can email us at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That is streamingthingspod@gmail.com. You can subscribe to our lovely Patreon and get access to extra episodes and things like that. Have the ability to vote on the next episodes, which will become very important after tonight's Patreon recording.
Yeah, the Goonies episode just dropped, so become a Patreon member right now and download that.
So that you can vote on what's going to be the next fan-voted episode.
Yeah.
Which we don't have a roster for as of yet, but we will by the end of tonight.
It'll be on. It's on the Patreon.
Yeah, go back and listen to it.
Yeah, you losers. What is this? Someone who pre-recorded this episode before we actually recorded the Goonies episode? Who do you take us for? Unprofessional people?
Yeah. The breathing there got me.
That's what you do in that situation.
I mean, I'm not acting suspect. That's how I breathe, Andy.
That's how you'd be on Jeopardy.
But we do have a very special surprise tonight. We actually got previous presidential candidate and beloved Senator Bernie Sanders here tonight to read our current Patreon list and give those patrons a good thank you.
Well, Chris, I didn't know you were throwing this to me. I came here on a bus. I was just trying to have my soup. And then I was told to come up here and tell, I assume, the billionaires and millionaires that listen to this podcast about the people, this grassroots movement funding streaming things from the people. First off, we'd like to thank Phil. He's a good guy. He's a mensch. We'd like to thank Carmelita. Carmelita, don't throw your cares away. Carrie, I'm love struck with you, Carrie. Thank you. Thank you for your donation to Streaming Things. It is a revolution. Enza, I know you are a foreign dignitary, but nevertheless, thank you so much for providing the funds that Streaming Things needs to continue. Also, thank you, Cake.
Hang on, I need to hear you say it.
Thank you, Cake.
We love you, Cake.
I don't love anything. I'm Bernie Sanders. But I love you, Cake. Katie, thank you so much, Katie. Daniel, I know you don't like to be mentioned, but fuck you. Really, that's all I have to say. And last but not least, Jimmy. I got to go back to my single family home. Goodbye.
Thank you, Bernie. We appreciate you stopping by the show. I know it takes a lot for you to... It's multiple bus routes here to the studio, I believe. So we really appreciate you coming by.
Yeah, he asked us for bus money.
I'm once again asking for bus money. You son of a bitch is what he said. It was weird.
I need to get on the train to get back to Vermont.
There's no train in Cincinnati. I don't know what he's going to do. There is a streetcar.
He's going to Union Terminal and be like super confused. I thought this was the terminal for the trains.
It's a fucking museum. Infrastructure needs to be funded.
Anywho, so thank you so much to all of our patron subscribers. You are quite literally keeping the lights on in Andy's house.
I do have to say, I wrote a whole goddamn thing for the patrons that we just bulldozed through because Chris was
I threw you a Bernie Sanders
go. And I'm like, well, the thing I prepped isn't set for that.
Do you want to do that too?
No, I don't.
They deserve the thanks.
No, we can't spend that much time
on our beloved patrons. No, I just feel really guilty now because I'm 3 hours asleep. Steve does all this prep work to have like a movie related thank you. And
just
I'm
check
like,
out the last
do
night.
Do the Bernie. Do the Bernie. Makes me chuckle. Dance, monkey.
Just check out the Last Night in Soho soundtrack and you can get a little inkling of what was planned.
Okay. You can just freestyle that to us later while we're watching Goonies.
We will.
I mean, earlier when we did that already.
Yeah, because that's already been released.
Exactly. You can also follow us on Twitter at StreamThingPod. And that's about it that I care to mention, I believe. Anybody else have any business news or personal things they want to share? Hmm? Andy's got a wart on his hand he can't get rid of.
It's my birthday tomorrow.
Also that's important.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
How old are you? How many years young?
Gotta be 34. Mm-hmm.
That's the age of Harrison Ford when he first got the role as Han Solo.
I mean, what has he been doing? Look at all I have accomplished. And he hadn't done shit by the time he was 34.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, man. He was a mere carpenter. I love when people tell that story. Like, he was only a carpenter. He was like, a piece Jesus. Of shit. He was basically worthless.
Did you know Jesus was a carpenter?
Jesus shot first?
Yes. Yes, he did.
Which brings us to our Crossing Stream segment. Solid segue. Crossing Streams is the segment where each week we delve into times past, much like our titular property.
Delving into titular
and revisit the things property. We've been streaming since last we met.
What have they been streaming?
Dearest Andrew, first introduce yourself to the show as if you haven't already been speaking, and then tell us what you've been streaming.
Dear listener, as you are listening to this, it is November 1st. I hope you had a wonderful Halloween.
It is November 1st for them.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. It's not November 1st for us in the current time stream.
Time travel, just like Loki.
Wow. In our time stream, it is still the spoopy season.
Yes.
The spoopy season.
The spoops.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Wonderful.
I'm just kidding. So I've just been watching a bunch of spoopy movies because it's spoopy season.
Spoopy.
So everything that I streamed this week, I streamed on a little streaming service called Shudder.
Did you watch Revenge?
I did not watch Revenge yet. However, that is currently streamable on Shudder. And a certain member of this podcast has recommended it very highly. And I intend to watch it.
I need to get your Shudder login again. Mine's logged out.
I got you, boo.
Because since you've got my Hulu like six times. I saw you sign in again the other day for some reason. I was like, this fucking guy.
I'm just putting it on everything. No, I got the login info for the TV and then never actually did it. So that one that you saw was that. Okay, so first up, I watched a movie on Shudder called Haunt. Haunt is produced by Eli Roth and directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods, who famously co-wrote A Quiet Place. With John Krasinski.
Wait, what did you see Eli Roth's role was?
He was
producer.
Oh, okay. So
basically
it was
nothing.
Like, yeah. In the trailer, it was... Yeah, exactly. He put his name on it.
He gave him some money.
So, but in the trailer, it's like from the writers of A Quiet Place and produced by Eli Roth. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay, here we go. And it is a pretty standard fare. A group of kids decides to go to a haunted house, and the haunted house is more than they expected it to be.
It's very spoopy.
Very McCamey Manor-esque, if you guys have heard of that haunted house. It's the one that has like a, I think it's down in Tennessee, it has like a massive wait list and like a thousands of dollar prize if you make it all the way through, but you basically sign away rights and they can torture you.
Is that the one where the guy, where they had that episode on Netflix about him? Or is it just the one I know about where they're pretty violent?
Yeah, they're super violent. They like will shave your head. And like I've heard that they will like pull your teeth out and shit. I don't know how true that part is. I know that they shave your head, but like they legitimately torture you. And so nobody has actually made it all the way through, in theory, at least that, or not in theory, but according to folklore. I would never fucking do that. And it sounds awful. As soon as they're allowed to touch me, I'm out.
You know, it sounds like a great time to me. Mm-hmm. Going to a dark place, paying them money to beat me up.
You actually pay them in dog food, which is really cool that they donate.
Oh, do you?
They donate to like dog shelters.
I reverse my opinion.
That does sound like fun.
You know, it does sound like fun bringing them dog food in order to beat me up. Yeah. That sounds awesome. So Haunt was actually...
I got this from Chewy. Here, this is my Chewy shipment for the day.
Haunt was actually really good. It, like most horror movies, completely fell apart in the third act. And I don't understand. It must be really fucking hard to make a horror movie because, like, it was solid, really good. Lots of good scares, really good kills. And I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, I was really genuinely excited. Like, I haven't run into a good new horror movie in quite some time. And I was, like, really digging it. And then I got to around the third act, and it just fucking fell apart. And it's like, where's that guy been the whole time? And it's like, why the fuck did you do that? That doesn't make any sense. And just completely went off the rails. And I was super bummed. But ultimately, it's not the destination. It's the journey that gets you there. And I had a good time. And so I would recommend it for just like a spoopy good time. I'm probably never going to watch it again, but I'm glad that I did.
Hey, you know, sometimes that's all you need in the spoop season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The next thing that I watched was the feature film debut of Johnny Depp. Do either of you know what movie that was?
Directorial debut?
Feature film debut.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, that one.
A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I was like, Freddy Krueger,
Friday the Jaysteenth?
Jason Goes to Hell.
Friday Night at Freddy's.
Yes, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes, so I watched the original Nightmare on Elm Street, and I'm reminded why I literally had a nightmare that night. That movie fucked me up when I was a kid.
Oh, I thought you meant the other night.
No, I did have a nightmare the night that I watched.
Oh, really? Recently?
I didn't have like a nightmare about Freddy Krueger or anything. Like, I did when I was a little kid. Oh, no,
the bed's going to eat me.
No, but like specifically the sequence when Nancy is nods off in school after her friend has already died. That sequence where she's in a body bag and being dragged by nothing and leaving like a streak of blood, that fucked me up so bad as a kid. And like still to this day, I was like watching it with my girlfriend and like got chills and shit. And like, it was like a nostalgia scare, which is fucking dope. The original Nightmare on Elm Street is super good. Occasionally really campy, but has some of the most genius stuff. Like that shot where Nancy's laying in bed and starts to nod off. And then Freddy Krueger, like, pushes through her wall and like hovers over her and then leans back in and disappears. It's like they put up like they cut like a hole in the wall and put up like a sheet across the whole thing and like had dude lean through with like the knife fingers and stuff. Badass.
Sounds like the idea of just referring to Freddy Krueger as dude. They're having dude lean through.
Well, it was actually like the set designer that was the one doing the leaning, but it's still super neat. Original, I'm cutting out a little bit, or maybe that's my headphones.
I think that's your headphones.
Super duper excellent movie. The Nightmare on Elm Street movies are so much fun. And so the other thing that I watched on Shudder was A Nightmare on Elm Street 2010. I watched the remake.
Remake?
Yeah, that's the one with the guy who played Rorschach in the Watchmen movie. Jackie Earl Haley?
Jackie Earl Haley, it is. I knew it started with a J. I went, J. It's...
Frankie.
And do you know who plays Nancy?
I do not.
I've seen this movie, but I don't remember.
Rooney Mara.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What a waste of talent, I'd imagine.
She actually does a pretty great job.
Well, of course she does.
Yeah.
Doesn't that movie do a weird thing where it sets up a main character? Yeah, that's it. Well, it sets up a main character, but that main character like dies 30 minutes in. Like it's one of the first people killed by Freddy Krueger. You're like, oh, that's not the person we're following. Okay.
Kinda, yeah. It is. So in the original Nightmare on Elm Street, Nancy has a friend that dies pretty early on, like during a sleepover. They sort of introduce that same character. Now it's weird. It's a weird remake because they do their own thing, but lean into the original like a little too much. So it's like there is that quote unquote best friend character who, I think in the new one, her name's Chris.
What?
I can't remember if it's Chris in the original or the new one.
Chris, what's your name?
Did you know?
I didn't even know this existed, and I'm sad it does. But of course it does.
Well, this was at a time when horror movie remakes were a big thing, like the year before they had remade Friday the 13th.
Yeah. It was the big popular thing like in 2009.
Still going on.
Oh, for sure.
Well, this came on the back. It was like the first time they really started doing hard, gritty reboots of all the 80s horror classics like Halloween and Friday the 13th. Like they all got remade or had these reboots within the last like couple years of each other. They were really, really back to back.
And this is probably the best of them. like well, pretty well done.
Really?
Like, does enough to differentiate itself from the original, but like I was saying, leans kind of hard into it. That shot that I was mentioning in the original where the production designer is playing Freddy Krueger, leans in like through the tarp and makes it look like he's coming out of the wall. They CG'd the hell out of that and had like, you can tell more of this Freddy Krueger's face and he's like leaning over around Kate Mara's head or yeah, like over her shoulder and stuff. And it looks fucking awful. And like, The original, that's like one of the most iconic horror shots of all time.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you were gonna do it again, first off, you shouldn't have, because it's a remake. You should be doing something original. And that's why I love like the Evil Dead one so much. They're just like, okay, take the concept, do our own thing. But in this one, if you were gonna do it, like that was number one on the list of ways not to. It was horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
I also remember, and this might just be because I'm not super familiar with the franchise overall, but I remember that movie going out of its way to try to make Freddy Krueger a sympathetic character.
Kind of
where they're like, oh no, he got wrongfully accused and that's why he's was killed. And
sort of. So I don't know how much, I guess movie stories from 1984. So it's not that big a deal. In the original, it's kind of like hinted at, like, was he maybe like a molester? Because we know that like the parents all went after Freddy Krueger and burned him alive. And like, that's his origin story. And so in this one, like one of the children is like, why the fuck did you do that? You don't even know if he was guilty. And then like they definitively answer that question. Was he innocent or not? And he wasn't. In the original, or I'm sorry, not in the remake. They're like, no, he like, they find pedophile pictures and stuff. And it's like, oh yeah, no, he was totally molesting these kids or whatever. They did a really, really good job with Freddy Krueger's makeup because he's a burn victim. And so in the original, he looks like a comic book character burn victim. Whereas in the remake, he looks like a burn victim, like somebody that had massive skin grafts and didn't really work. Like he looks fucked up. And
also it's Jackie Earle Haley. So you got a good canvas to work off of when you're trying to make someone look fucked up.
Absolutely. And he's got the perfect voice for it. So like generally Freddy Krueger like is like spooky, but has these like campy one liners and stuff.
You're my nightmare now, Nancy.
Right.
that's what's awesome.
Hey, look at this. And cuts his fingers off and stuff. But, you know, this is picture Rorschach's voice doing like the, I'm God. You know what I mean? Like super all fucked up. And and they're, you know, leaning into the more horror aspects of it. But he killed it as Freddy Krueger. Rooney Mara was excellent as Nancy. The part that you were talking about, her name was Chris. Katie Cassidy of Green Arrow fame, or just Arrow. Mm. She played Black Canary in that. She is the one that plays Chris, who is like the Nancy's friend that kind of seems like the main character starting out and then ultimately isn't. There's a really, really cool recreation of the floating body death scene from the original where girl's asleep and then in sleeping bed with her boyfriend, then gets lifted up in the air and slammed around the ceiling and stuff and then cut open. They recreate that to great effect. That's like one of the only times where they're like nodding heavily into the original and do a good job with it. Mm-hmm. As far as horror movie remakes go, solid.
I might have to check it out before spooky season ends, but probably won't, but probably should.
Got a couple days.
Did they successfully do that kill from the first movie where he turns Nancy's mom into an inflatable sex doll and pulls her through a window?
No, they... That's so bad,
That's
dude.
Not what it's supposed to be, because it's supposed to be like a trick of the camera where it cuts away from her and then cuts back and she gets like slurped into the window, but it's clearly very like
an inflatable doll.
It's an inflatable doll.
So that movie is a low-budget hero story.
Yeah.
The way that they did... Do you guys know how they did those shots? Johnny Depp's death and the girl getting thrown around the room death.
I don't.
So really cool. They built a room that can be turned on an axis. And so they actually turn the room upside down and then pump hundreds of gallons of fake blood through the ceiling and film it upside down.
Hmm.
And that way it looks like it's being burst through the bed. So it's actually just water falling from the ceiling.
So how did they have her float around?
They did the same thing. They turned it upside down and rebuilt the set to where like the ceiling was actually the floor and stuff. But does that make sense?
Was it like green screen? Because she's straight up turning in air and stuff.
No, she's just rolling around and stuff in that, like they're turning the room. And it was dangerous. She got all bruised up and stuff. And like they're flipping this room around and stuff, but also like changing the camera to where it looks like the room's straight. If that makes sense. And she's turning.
I get what you're saying. It's just there are sequences where she's prolonged just straight up in the air. And I'm curious how that was done.
I don't remember, but I know that there's no like digital stuff there. Oh. They all just had this like giant flippy floppy room. When they did the blood, though, they didn't think about it. And that set filled with water and it's on a soundstage, and that water like started to break the fake room and rush out, and everybody ran and it like got in the electrical and stuff, and people got electrocuted and stuff up top.
Oh,
and
dang.
It was just really poorly planned. Yeah, it's just like pouring all over this light that's on, and they're like, yeah, good shot. Yay, this is going to be fine.
That's why they have unions.
But the, right, the very last scene where she gets yanked as a doll, there was actually 5 or 6 endings to this film, and Wes Craven hated that one. But the studio wanted one where Freddy was like,
I'm still here.
He's going to return so they could have all the sequel money and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he shot a few different returnee ones. One of them was where the main character is driving in a car and like the roof turns into his like striped sweater. Like he is the car basically. And he's like, man, I got you. You're in my car, my dream car body.
You're in my belly.
And like the studio hated that one. So they're trying to get funding from this other studio to buy the film.
I wonder why.
And it's got the ending where he actually likes the ending in the reel. The producer guy calls Wes and he's like, hey, do you have the ending with the, where he grabs the mom through the window? I love that ending. And I told them about it and they're fucking stoked about it. And he's like, no. And so they had to send this secretary. The studio's already watching the film. And the secretary's like running back to wherever they fucking keep the reels. And the editor's like trying to edit the ending onto this movie while it's playing.
Wow. Ooh, I've had to do that before.
Yeah.
That's just scary.
Yeah, it was spoopy for them.
Well, I don't know to what extent he was editing, but I've had to.
I mean, I don't know. He had to splice a whole different.
I've had to splice like tack on the end of something like on top of a reel as it was playing, and it was fucking horrifying.
So that's what he did for the execs, and like they have no distribution if this doesn't work. Wow. He successfully adds the ending and they're like, meh, and they still didn't like it. But for some reason that ending stuck, and everyone hates it involved in the actual artistry of the film. So should know.
Liked it. They did better with the that kill in the remake.
Well, I would hope so. Yeah. 40 years later.
Kind of wish that they had kept that one.
But it's still, I think, just low budget problem solving heroism to me. Mm-hmm. Some of those kills are really cool. And it was the first, you know, Halloween and Friday the 13th had already happened. Mm-hmm. But Wes Craven's idea was so surreal. Like he comes in your dreams. Like, you know what I mean? It was just like,
yeah, I don't know if we should do this, buddy. Thematically, like unable to differentiate what's real and what's imaginary in a, you know, formative period in your life. It's super cool.
And that was Wes Craven's first film, right? Was this after like People Under the Stairs? And this is before.
I'd have to look it up on my phone, but I can't.
I don't think so.
I have a dog in my arm. That's why I can't.
No, Last House on the Left was his debut.
So that's where he got the pedigree from, the cojones.
And then credit. The Hills Have Eyes. So there you go.
Wow. He had already done lots of spoopies. Mm-hmm. Annie Hoosel.
But yeah, that's what I've been streaming.
I brought up People Under the Stairs. That was a deep cut. That is him, right?
No
99%
idea.
99% sure.
No
that
idea.
It was a movie I liked when I was a kid. Steve.
Yes, it was him.
Thank you, Andrew. What the fuck have you been streaming?
Dude, I've been streaming so much
shit. I don't know why I cursed. I apologize.
No, it's okay. I like the energy.
I'm sleepy.
Read it to me again.
What the fuck have you been streaming?
Motherfucker, I've been streaming so much shit.
Line.
I like this chemistry we have going. Let's bounce it back and forth. First off, I started to stream. Well, some of you who follow me on Instagram may have noticed that on my story, I put up a poll asking, should I start watching 1998's Cowboy Bebop in anticipation of the new Cowboy Bebop? I did not wait for the polls to come in because I just started watching the first episode.
Nice.
You can stream it on Netflix. I only streamed the first episode because it's an anime from the 90s, and so like it just wasn't in the right space to watch it. That being said, it was always a property that like growing up like in high school and like my younger college years, I remember a lot of my close friends
were really into Cowboy Bebop, and they're always like, watch it, watch it, watch it. I just never got around to it. So finally, I'm like, ah, now's the time. I've got time to watch shit now. The new Cowboy Bebop's coming out, and I kind of want to watch that because that looks super stylish and fresh and hip, as the young people say.
Sheesh.
So I booted up, and one thing I do have to say that I really, really enjoy is just the manic style of like the music and the way they use color, especially in like the introduction, like that intro animation is really, really fun and snappy and cool. I really, really like that. And it's people in spaceships being cowboys and bebopping all over shit. The galaxy.
Yeah, bebopping, rocksteadying.
It does do that weird thing that animes like just can't resist doing, where if a man is like super intense, his eyes are bulging out of his head and he's like super red in the face. He's like, it's like all these like just over the top performances. And you know, you have to be in the right mindset to watch that kind of thing. And I just wasn't in that right mindset. So I did not continue watching it. Maybe I will, probably won't. The dubs were on, sadly.
Aww.
I know Ellie doesn't like Cowboy Bebop either.
No,
not a fan.
And the dubs were on, and I kept watching them because the voice actor for Spike Spiegel, the main character, as soon as that motherfucker started talking, I'm like, that's Grunt from Mass Effect, and I can't not hear it. Like, it's just Grunt from Mass Effect not Shepherd. Being mean. Yeah, it's not. It's, instead of going Shepherd, it's him going Shepherd. But it's him. It's undeniably him. And
did you look it up? It is him.
Yeah, it's 100% Steve Blum. He's a huge voice actor. He's in like so many goddamn things. I'm sure there's something else I could probably name him off of that would be more relevant, you know.
So the dubbing for Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, dubbing wasn't great, but dubs rarely are.
No.
The next thing I started watching, we're going to keep with this animation theme. I started watching an animated show also on Netflix that just came out this week, I believe, called Inside Job, starring Lizzie Kaplan, Christian Slater, Clark Duke, among others. For those of you that need a synopsis, Netflix describes it as four employees of the deep state. Conspiracies aren't just theories. They're facts. And keeping them a secret is a full-time job. Now, that sounds like a serious thing. It's not at all. Like, imagine if...
Christian Slater getting work is a serious thing.
Yeah, that is a serious thing.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that guy needs to get more work. He's underrated.
Reboot Heathers.
I walked in on my wife watching this and sat down and watched like three episodes in the middle, which I didn't mean to do, but I was putting on my shoes. I hate doing that. It's not how I am. It was so engrossing and funny that I couldn't stop. So I recommend it to everybody, but go on.
Yeah, it's really silly. Basically, there's a deep state, and Lizzie Kaplan is this woman who's trying to kind of like move up the corporate ladder of the deep state. And she's got like her coworkers that are all, you know, one guy's the doctor, but he's addicted to chemtrails. And there's an alien, but he's voiced by what's the reporter's name in Stranger Things? Maury Bauman.
Yes.
That actor voices the alien, and he's like such a prick.
That alien's awesome.
Yeah, he's like so fucking funny. There's like a whole episode where like he gets amnesia and he's like dropped in this small town, and they pretty much replay E.T., but if E.T. was a giant cock bag to the kids.
Awesome.
Hey, that's the episode I walked in on. Back? There was a part where they're like talking about having an orgy, and his character's like a squid. An alien squid thing. And he's like, I want to come. I love sex. I'm super good at it. And I like looked at the TV and cocked my head, and I was like, sat down. Interesting.
Go on.
I too am good at it. But no, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's only 10 episodes.
They drew the character Reagan to look like Lizzie Kaplan. It's really funny.
Yeah.
Maybe accidentally, but
I don't know about you guys, but I love Lizzie Kaplan.
Oh, for sure.
She's one of those actresses that when she pops in something, I'm always like, I instantly like the show.
Ooh, piece of candy.
I like the show now. Like she pops into, remember New Girl? Remember that show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was like in the first season of New Girl as like one of the characters' girlfriends, you know, for like three or four episodes. And as soon as she popped up in that show, I'm like, well, I like this show now.
If Zooey Deschanel wasn't enough.
I know, right? I love Zooey too, but Lizzie Kaplan too.
They kind of look alike.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Both brunette.
Yeah. They got bangs. Yeah. Do you ever see Party Down?
No.
It's by the...
That's something I like to do.
I think you would actually love the show. I think
Party Down, not Party Hardy.
It's only two seasons. It stars Adam Scott, Lizzie Kaplan, and a bunch of... Jane Lynch is in it. There's a lot of good actors in it, but it's from the creator of Veronica Mars. And it's about actors in LA who are, you know,
down on their luck, they can't get an acting gig. So their real full-time job is their caterers. And it's just the every episode is them at a different catering function and the insanity that involves them at this catering event.
And that sounds interesting.
It's really, really funny. It's really good. The best episode is the episode where they cater at Steve Guttenberg's house, playing himself. And it's one of those things where they show up and Steve Guttenberg's like, "Oh man, I forgot to tell you guys. I meant to cancel the parties no more. Oh, now I feel bad. You know what? Let's have a party just us." And it's just these normal people partying with Steve Guttenberg, and it's fucking hilarious. But yeah, Party Down. Go watch that. I didn't stream that, but I always want to
plug that wherever plug possible. That
show, because it only got 2 seasons and it's a crime. And lastly, I want to talk about I guess I'm an asshole because I thought you guys had already saw this and were being super kind and polite and not talking about it to me because you didn't want to spoil it for me. But then after I saw it, I realized, oh no, they haven't seen it either. I'm the asshole who went and saw it by myself.
What is this?
That would be No Time to Die.
Oh yeah. No, I haven't seen it yet.
No, that's okay. That was my fault. That was the night I had tickets and bitched out on going by myself because it was at 9 p.m. on a Saturday and I was just having anxiety and stuff and just like didn't go. And that's my fault.
Yeah, I just got busy.
Because I had tickets to the Thursday show and we had to record the podcast that night. So I switched it to Saturday, but it was 9 o'clock on Saturday. I was like, that's fine. I'll have a good time. And I was like, I don't want to go peak time by myself. Anyway, go on. What'd you think of it?
No, I loved it. It's really fucking good. It's a really, really great send off to Daniel Craig's Bond. It feels like a proper wrapping up to that story. His performance is really fucking great. Thankfully, you'll be happy to know, Andy, he has a lot better chemistry with Lea Seydoux in this movie than the inspector. There's also a lot of standout, like Ana de Armas in that movie is so fucking great. She's awesome in it.
I told you she's my favorite Bond girl and I've never even seen that movie.
Yeah, you will love her even more. She is definitely a standout.
I want to see this so bad. It's just so long and I keep wanting to double feature something with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it won't work because the runtime.
It's long as hell. It's like 2 hours. And
like tomorrow we're seeing The Last Duel and I'm tempted to try to find a noon showing of.
There isn't. So they're not doing showings at AMC this week until
before five. Yeah.
Before 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Why?
There are no movies before three.
So I might go to Wilder or something though, and then drive, but it's just hard to pull off.
Cause I was trying to figure out if I can watch French Dispatch before.
Check the Wilder showings. I mean, we'll have to pay for a ticket, but.
What do you take me as?
I know.
Fucking Bernie Sanders is on speed dial because I'm poor as hell. He knows my plight.
Yeah, he does.
But yeah, No Time to Die was really, really great. I do want to point out, definitely go see this movie. The opening 5-ish minutes is a perfect example of how to do horror in broad daylight, which is super fascinating when you think of it in the context. This is a James Bond movie, but the first 5 minutes play like a horror film and it's great. Like,
is it like the introduction of Rami Malek's villain?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You had my curiosity. Now you have my attention. It's so fucking
good. Like, just some of the shot, like, they have stuff in view of the camera for a long time. And it's like, oh shit, it's right. No, behind you, that type of thing. It's really, really well done.
Daylight horror is so hard to do.
It is.
I'm stoked.
Whoa, what's that?
Chris's laptop's just there's a ghost. I told you guys it's spoopy season.
Spoopy season.
It's the Muppets. It's a commercial for a spoopy Muppets movie.
The ghost of Miss Piggy's.
Kermit, there's ghosts. Kermit.
Yeah.
That's all I've been streaming. I didn't stream Muppets.
Oh, okay. I didn't stream much either. So we're close to the main event, folks. I watched a movie called The Forgotten Battle. Did you guys see this, perhaps?
I did, but I forgot about it.
It's a new Netflix. I used that dad joke on my son because I watched it with him. And I was like, do you remember that movie that we wanted to watch? I saw you do the trailer and now it dropped. And he's like, no, I don't remember it. And I was like, it's called The Forgotten Battle. And he was like, I don't remember it, Dad. And I was like, so you forgot it? He didn't laugh either.
I hate you, Dad.
It's about World War II, which is why I watched it with my son, 1944. But it's about a lesser known important event in that war. So it's a British glider pilot, a Dutch boy fighting on the German side, and a Dutch female resistance member all end up involved in the Battle of the Scheldt.
Question. When you say Dutch boy, do you mean a young
Dutch person?
Yes.
Who is a male? Okay.
Yes.
The way you said that almost sounded like it could have been like, oh, you know, the Dutch boys they use in World War II. Like
it's, one of the Dutch boys. No, it's a British glider pilot, comma, a Dutch boy fighting on the German side and a Dutch female resistance member. I will say I did not like this movie and I do not recommend that anyone watch it. However, it was an interesting movie in there. They did two things that I really like. And this is going to sound terrible, and I'm going to do my very best to phrase it in a way that is not later able to be clipped and used against me if this show ever makes it anywhere. However, they showed a Nazi in an empathetic light. And what I mean by that is that it is a Dutch person, so a territory that Germany conquered, forced into conscription into the German army, who holds none of their beliefs. It's not like an SS member or anything. Resigned to fighting amongst them and against the Allies. And I'm sure that there were many thousands of people like that. And that is its own terrible thing that is not touched upon very much, I feel like. Usually it's like faceless swastika bearing uniforms shot down in glee. And this is just like this boy who's just like keeps getting pushed into trenches and like shooting it. Right. You know what I mean? He's just terrified the whole time and hates it.
I went on this kick reading a bunch of Pulitzer winners. And one of them I read was All the Light We Cannot See. And it's set during World War II. And it's about this like blind French girl and basically the exact same thing. A conscription soldier from the Axis that does not want to be a part of it, but is forced to because of this certain skill that he has with radios. But
turn him on.
they're easy to point at and make a nameless villain.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more interesting when you can dig into a more humanitarian side of
it. Yeah. I mean, those scenes were really interesting. I also didn't know much about the gliders, but I don't know, you guys might, but apparently they took the planes that you would see in dogfights that are like crop duster planes flown by the guy in Independence Day to me now.
I'm back.
They took those and like there would strap like ropes and hooks to a glider and like tow a plane up to the air and then like unleash it to like be silent. It would drop bombs and you couldn't hear it coming because it has no engine. Didn't know that was a thing, but apparently that was a thing. That was interesting. But also they do a thing that's not done enough where in international movies where you have, you know, there's part of it's in Holland and part of it's in Germany and part of it's in France and part of it's in England. Each of those countries, they speak that language, you know, and then if it's not in English, it has subtitles. And so, you know, it's an understandable thing, but a little annoying when they say it's in Japan and they just decide to.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Speak English with a slightly what they think is a Japanese accent because they know the audience is English, right? Rather than just trust people to watch a movie with subtitles. And you know what I mean? No matter where in the world it went, it used the actual language and those actors from that country. And I thought, oh, this is cool. This is like a truly international movie. And
yeah,
I've only seen that done a few times. And I really respect it. However, it's mostly not a good movie. I was bored. Anyway, that's The Forgotten Battle. I will gladly forget about it after this. But I did also watch a show called My Name on Netflix. Have you guys seen this or heard of it?
No.
So I assume with the popularity of Squid Game, this got pushed. Oh, my name is Chris.
Yeah. Hi.
My came name up is, for the second time.
My name is.
This is another Korean show after the popularity of Squid Game. I suppose is why it got pushed up in the Netflix algorithm, I would imagine. But rightfully so. This is the story about a woman who joins an organized crime ring and infiltrates the police as an undercover agent in order to find out the truth about her father's death. So the show opens and she's just like a high school teenager whose father has recently perished. This is all in the first 2 minutes. And later it becomes revealed that he was sort of about a he was a crime member, sort of a, I don't know any gangs in Korea, but he's a huge organized crime ring. And so she's kind of shunned in the school for that. And long story short, she decides to join that organization to avenge her father's death. And so like there's whole episodes devoted to like her training. And she's the only woman amidst like dozens and dozens of gangster trainee men. So she has to be extra tough to survive that, right? So if you're a fan of movies like The Raid or Atomic Blonde or anything like that, it's really interesting. A lot of badass choreography and fighting, but also Korean cinema is really on a tear these last 4 or 5 years, I feel like.
So hot right now.
Or maybe has always been wonderful. I just became aware of it. But ever since like I started watching Bong Joon-ho movies and Train to Busan, things like that, I've been really paying attention to shit like this. I watch them every time I see them. Squid Game was phenomenal. My Name is really, really good. And if you liked Squid Game, I really recommend that you check out My Name. And I will be updating you. I've watched, I think, three episodes. It's really, really good. I really want you to watch it. That's the close of our crossing strings. Not strings. We don't cross strings around here. We cross streams, damn it.
We do sometimes.
And the beginning of our main event, the Streaming Things review of Last Night in Soho.
Ja, und Dexy und Co. sind diese Woche mit ihrer neuesten Platte Nummer 19 in England, Last Night in Soho.
You came into my life like rain upon a barren desert.
All right, this song is called Last Night in Soho, sung by Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick, and Titch, which is the song that gets the, which is the title for this movie. It's where he got the title from, was the song.
But not on the soundtrack?
It is on the soundtrack.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I did, however, I can't play it on Spotify. I guess Spotify doesn't have the right to play this specific song on the soundtrack.
Huh. Isn't this the, no, it's not the one I was thinking of. I think this is the one that made me think of Sweet Caroline, though.
Yeah, you're right.
I tried to listen to the soundtrack myself this morning on my commute to Louisville, and I was going to call you, but it was too early. But Apple Music doesn't have the rights to any of these songs either, and I was super pissed. Wow. I was like, where the fuck was Steve listening to all these songs? I'm not going to play YouTube in my car all the way down.
Spotify seemed to have all of them except for like two, and this was one of them. It's like it appears, but it's grayed out, and you can't
exactly select it. Apple Music had like 18 of the 22 songs grayed out.
Wow,
and I was like, we got to be in fucking London to listen to these.
London.
Fucking London.
Bollocks.
I just love how that band's name.
You think you can leave?
that band's name is Dave D, Dozy, Beaky, Mick, and Titch.
And Titch, baby.
It sounds like fucking Justice Kavanaugh's college friends.
It sounds like the...
Right. I like beer.
I like beer.
Squee
so much. Didn't he have a friend named Squee? Like that was part of the thing.
God,
like,
I don't remember
this
that.
Is Boofer and Squee.
I'll just never forget the face that he made when he says, "I like beer."
Actually, one of the best SNL skits was when Matt Damon played him in their opening thing. Oh. They're like, "Justin Kavanaugh, do you like to drink?" And it's like, "You mean was I cool? Yeah,
yeah. I was so cool, good. Bro.
So good." But yeah, Last Night in Soho by director Edgar Wright.
Lots of puss.
Edgar Wright.
That's basically what Kavanaugh said.
Written and directed by Edgar Wright and co-written by Christy Wilson Cairns. This was a movie for certain. But Edgar Wright is one of our very favorite directors. I think all three of us, I can safely
Most
say that,
definitely.
Right?
Hell yeah.
Director Love of him. The Cornetto trilogy, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and At World's End.
Scott Pilgrim, Baby Driver,
all goodies, and the documentary about the Sparks Brothers.
I did not watch that.
I didn't either, but I'm just saying it exists.
I heard it was okay.
Yeah,
I think the only thing we left out was Fistful of Fingers.
This movie is described by IMDb thusly. And this movie, I mean Last Night in Soho. An aspiring fashion designer is mysteriously able to enter the 1960s, where she encounters a dazzling wannabe singer. But the glamour is not all it appears to be. And the dreams of the past start to crack and splinter into something darker. Mm. That's a little spoilery for my taste, for personally, but I'm very spoiler averse. I mean, almost too so. Like a lady who, I don't know why it's a lady, I'm a fucking misogynist, who's very fearful of spiders. Like, just a little too much. Like, come on, just hit it with a paper towel. I'm going to throw Andy for a loop here and toss it to Steve.
What?
So what we're going to do is we're going to give a spoiler-free review, just overall thoughts, and then we will use a spoiler bumper for those of you who have not delved out into the dangerous COVID-ridden forest.
I don't think there's a lot of COVID just in the forest. You're outside.
Oh, really? Are you a scientist?
Steve.
Are you a scientist? I saw it on Facebook.
Hey, listen, I've done my own research. Okay?
I saw it on Facebook. I saw it on Meta. Okay. Yeah. So, Steve, what are your overall thoughts on Last Night in Soho?
I really had a great time with this movie. So I had an expectation going. Actually, I did not have too high expectations going in. It was one of those things where I saw the trailer and just based off the trailer, I'm like, it's Edgar Wright. I have a gist of what the story is. I'm going to probably like this movie. And then I went in and I liked this movie. I thought it was really, really well done. I think Edgar Wright is, this is almost like his most subdued movie, where it's not quite like when you think of Edgar Wright, the first thing I think of is like quick shots in the edit, just zipping
match cut after match cut,
like looking at everything. And there's like all this energy and it doesn't have those type of shots, but it still has a lot of energy to it. It's a beautiful film. I think the lighting in particular is used to great effect. It does this great thing where this movie wants to almost reimagine filmmaking of that age, but with modern sensibilities to it. There's so many shots that are reminiscent of like horror films from the 60s, and they're done really, really well. And I almost wish there was more of that. And the story is kind of bizarre, and I think that's why a lot of the synopsis can be considered more spoilery than necessary. Because if you just like, it's hard to describe to someone what this movie would be without spoiling at least the main conceit, which is like, oh, someone can go and experience the 60s, you know. But I think it's overall done really, really well in terms of we're following two different characters. One character is basically just watching the other character's life unfold, but it affects her deeply as well. And I think that's such a weird, complicated thing to pull off, and he's able to do it really, really well. I think in a lesser director's hands, this movie would just be meh. You know, like if it didn't have Edgar Wright's style and obvious love for that style of film, that era of the 60s in London. If you didn't have a director that had those things, this movie would not be nearly as good as successful. Cause I think on paper, it is a crazy concept, but on paper, I don't think it's necessarily written super well. But because you have that flash and that craftsmanship from Edgar Wright, it definitely elevates the material. Plus, there's some pretty good performances that I really, really enjoyed. But there is one notably bad performance, and I'm sure we'll all get to, because I think we all kind of felt the same thing about this one particular actor. But overall, really, really love the movie. The soundtrack is dope. I've been listening to it on repeat. I love that style of music anyway. So I've been enjoying my time on the Spotify, where you can watch listen to 18 of the 20 tracks, unlike Apple Music, where you can listen to 2 of the 20 tracks.
Shout out to Spotify, who donates a generous contribution to us every week.
Yeah, it's called my subscription.
Andrew, what did you think of Last Night in Soho?
Man, I wanted to love this movie so bad, and I didn't. I was wildly disappointed. I still liked it. I liked it, but when I think Edgar Wright horror movie, like, oh my God, my expectations went through the fucking moon. You know what I mean? Like, he's like top three director for me. And so I wanted to love the hell out of this movie, but like you said, it's his most subdued movie. Like, it's basically like cutting out his style. You know what I mean? And so then what's left there? And now, there are some really beautiful moments and extremely cool trick photography and stuff where, like, we know that the one character's witnessing another character in the past. And there's like a dance sequence with Thomasin McKenzie, Anya Taylor-Joy, and Matt Smith. And like Matt Smith is like swinging a girl past the camera, and by the time the camera's unblocked, it's the other girl that he's swinging around, and like beautifully done, super cool, really subtle ways in which like Thomasin McKenzie appears in mirrors while she's watching what's going on in the past. Really, really, really neat. This movie is a super cool concept, super duper cool, that probably should have been directed by somebody else, because it felt like somebody who is not a horror movie person trying to make a horror movie. And it's like, okay, so what is a horror movie person that doesn't make horror, or what is a not horror movie person gonna do when they try to make a horror movie? They're gonna use a lot of jump scares. They're gonna have a little bit of an over-reliance on CG, and they're going to struggle with pacing, and all of those things happened in this movie. It felt bloated. It took a really long time. Like, it started out solid as hell. Like, most of the first act was super great, and I was like really excited about how it was building up. And then eventually I'm like, okay, come on, get along with it. And I started to be bored during the modern day sequence, which is not good. Modern day sequences. And so I think that a solid like 20 minutes probably could have been cut out of the movie. I think that the performances were fantastic, and there were moments of absolute brilliance in it. You know, I mean, Edgar Wright, even if this is not his forte, is still a fucking phenomenal director. And so he did some really, really cool stuff. It just, and I still, like I said, I liked it, but I wanted to love it, and I didn't.
Okay. My thoughts, again, we talked obviously a lot last night after we saw this movie, and I said that I wanted to take some time to really process how I felt about this movie. And I obviously did. I had two to three hour drives today, and I listened to a lot of this kind of music and just kind of thought about it. And I decided to add an extra half a star. So last night I gave 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd. I bumped it to 4.
John Leguizamo's performance.
Yes,
for sure.
For sure.
Shoot, twins.
He's not in this movie.
All the way back, I was just thinking of Spawn again. Like, because of his performance in Spawn, I added a star to Last Night in Soho.
That's going
to
be a reason from here on out. If we ever add half a star to anything retroactively, it's for John Leguizamo's performance.
100%. I agree with Andy on a lot of stuff. I think I don't know how he feels about the third act, but I think that the first and third acts are very strong. It's the act two that struggles, and it's mostly due to one actor in particular's pretty awful rendition of the script, or maybe just that's how the script was. I'm not sure, but hated everything about what was going on there. I also think that there is what is supposed to be a huge turn in the plot that is telegraphed completely. It is not surprising in any way. And I think it is meant to be. And it's not a scary movie, right? But I disagree that another director maybe could have made a scarier movie, but Edgar Wright is a savant when it comes to pop culture. I can't think of anyone aside from maybe Tarantino who visibly loves movies when making movies. You can see it in the DNA of the scenes. I love Edgar Wright's editing. I think he's one of the most talented, and I know an editor does the editing, but it has to be under his direction because it's always the same kind of plop, plop, plop. I just love his style when it comes to a final cut of a film. And there is no one that I know of that knows more about music that I've hardly even heard of and uses it in his films and teaches me about that stuff. And what I'm saying is, and obviously he's from England, so you've got this inborn love of 1960s music and 60s cinema, and you've got a love of London, and there is no man or woman on earth better suited to tell that story than Edgar Wright. It's just unfortunate that it's in an ineffectual, somewhat horror film. I just choose to not see this as a horror film, and that made me love it more. Also, the reasons why I loved it will be more spoilery, so it would have to come back to me when we allow some spoilers.
I do kind of want to push back, because I know a lot of people are saying, like, oh, this is a horror film, and I don't think it's a horror film either. Like, if someone was like, is this a thriller? Is it a mystery? I would say yes. It's all those things. But, like, even watching the trailers, I never thought this was going to be a horror film, you know, as you think of horror films typically.
Sure.
Like, so I was always thinking, coming into this movie, like, this is going to be some sort of psychological thriller with Edgar Wright's, you know, signature on it, sure. You know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was marketed as Edgar Wright's foray into horror, right? From the studio and from Edgar Wright himself. But I agree with you
definitely
that
definitely not a horror film.
I agree with you that it's much easier to view in a positive light if you don't think of it that way. I mean, yeah. It's a horror as much as The Witch is a typical horror film,
but it does try to be spooky many times.
I have an article I want to read because Andy and I had some specific criticisms last night that nobody will ever believe us, but is elucidated in this article by a professional critic almost to the T, but by, you know, with much smarter words. This is published in Vulture by Bill Jabiri, who's one of my favorite critics. And there's no spoilers in this. Blah, blah, blah. With Wright utilizing shock tactics and jump scares with the same kid in a candy store voraciousness he brings to the film's pop montages, right? And we can all agree that there was, like I said, as soon as he walked out, I was like, he really was fucking having a great time with being able to use jump scares in his movies for once, right. Wasn't he? Almost to where it's annoying. That can have a somewhat numbing effect, was his next sentence. And then he goes on to say, his red herrings don't always work either. One particular narrative surprise involves a certain character. I almost spoiled something. Telegraphed fairly early on, perhaps because Wright, at least on a visual and narrative level, does not really do subtlety. Right. And that I think we can agree with that. But really, who wants subtlety? So overall, this critic loved the movie. Mm-hmm. So do I. But I agree that there's just a lot of things that don't work because of Wright's particular sensibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you're not it's not a Shyamalan twist by any means. Right. It's an attempt at one that fails. And mm-hmm. that's annoying. But ultimately, again, I was pretty disappointed until the last 20 minutes. And then I was like, OK, we salvaged this. And I can't say why because of spoilers. So let's get into spoilers right now.
You are entering spoiler territory.
You're bullshit.
So what I spent most of the time thinking on and trying to see the import of this movie and the impact on me. First, I absolutely adore Thomasin McKenzie. And
crushed it.
Everybody knows I love Anya Taylor-Joy. They both did a phenomenal job. Thomasin McKenzie's performance was so mousy that it sometimes annoyed me, mm-hmm. but that was on purpose, right? This is a small fish in a big old pond, right? And so I had so much empathy for her character that I couldn't help but be terrified during some of the scenes just for that character, which is what you want in any horror film. And some of the stuff was lost on me until later. Like, I'm not a pop culture savant the way that Edgar Wright is. So I didn't know that, you know, Dame Diana Rigg and Rita Tushingham, who played Eloise's grandmother, were huge icons of 1960s cinema and were used very much on purpose. Mm-hmm. Right. I just had a sense that I was missing some things. Like I told you afterwards.
So was Margaret Nolan. I think she's the bartender.
Oh, really?
I think, yeah, she was a Bond girl.
Yeah. See? So, I mean, and then they had... was it so Thunderball? The marquee had Thunderball, the Sean Connery mm-hmm. Bond film. Maybe she's in that one.
In that one, yeah, that'd be dope.
It'd be awesome. So there's pieces like that I was missing, but just the whole element of Sandy's character being forced into sex trafficking.
Sandy being Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yes. Well, presumably they've seen the movie recently if they got this far. But you know, Sandy's character ultimately being forced into sex trafficking, and that's. And here's what I started thinking while I was driving. That's the horror element of this movie. It's not so much the ghost chasing, which are not scary for the most part throughout. It's just tense, right? In an Uncut Gems kind of way. But that is horrifying. Like, so he was trying to tell a story about, yes, I love 1960s London. I love the music. I love the cinema. Fuck, I wish I was there. And yet I bet it was fucking awful for most people. What if I was a woman in the 60s? You know what I mean? And that's where the horror element came in. I'm getting chills now. And I'm like, okay, that's the story. That's what I was failing to focus on because I'm a dude when I was watching this film last night, right? Mm-hmm. It's how scary that would be. I mean, I don't know how I missed it. The whole narrative framing is grandmother talking about how your mother went and she was alone and she was a young woman and it was too much for her and you're
she
fucking, you're clairvoyant. Yeah. Right, exactly. So it was be very careful. And then this young woman alone, scorned by other women, gets caught in this nightmare about another woman alone 40 years earlier that's trying to make it big and she's confident and talented and none of that matters because the chips are stacked against her. You know what I mean? And it's just, then I started like, you know what? this is a fucking good movie that's flawed, 4 out of 5 stars. Mm-hmm. I just want to get that out because it's weighing on me, man. Go ahead, jump in whenever either one of you. I mean, any response to that, I guess? Or
yeah, so I 100% agree. And like thematically, it was there for sure that like, hey, this is what happens to most people that try to pursue their dreams. And that was established pretty significantly, just the fact that she's surrounded by all these people that are so cutthroat against each other at the school, fashion school that she goes to. I don't think that, so I struggle with like, it's basically a really great concept that was just kind of poorly executed. Like it's essentially like a horror version of Midnight in Paris, right? Where it's like you're an aspiring creative that goes to the city that in a certain era was like the pinnacle of what you aspire to be. So in Midnight in Paris, it's dude that's an aspiring writer that thinks that 1920s Paris was like the tits. And like he travels back in time and he gets to meet Ernest Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald and stuff and super cool. But we got to see a lot, and I hate to be like a Woody Allen did it better. Like obviously that, but the flashbacks to Sandy's journey, I wish that we had gotten just a little bit more, because essentially her dreams are immediately crushed. And like, so like, character sensibility wise, I struggle a little bit with like, how are you okay? Like, she meets this charming dude at the Cafe de Paris, and he's like, I bet I can probably get you an audition somewhere, and awesome. And she gets him a gig, or he gets her a gig as a backup dancer, and then immediately is like, now go fuck this guy. And she's like, I don't wanna, but I guess I will. And now she's just like her downturn into like the horror was just immediate and without any emotional arc. It was just, and now you're a victim. And I struggle with that because there wasn't any like, oh, I have nowhere to go. Or there was no, I mean, I guess you assume that, but you didn't give me any kind of character arc to the devolution of her, or the destruction of her dreams into what is ultimately a tragic, horrible thing. It's just like, now you're fucking dudes. And I struggle with that. Also, well, like
the show, the background dancer, she's in it's a burlesque show. It's mm-hmm. like,
yeah. It's immediately you're flashing your ass on stage and now go fuck this guy. And
well, I think that was a really awesome turn that was done well, was Eloise's character, Thomas McKenzie's character. Eloise was, waiting, excited, and for the reveal of her hero to take the forefront in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't her, and she's mm-hmm. concerned and confused. And then she sees her in the back.
Dancer. Yeah, that was effective for Eloise.
And there was this took 40 minutes before, and you said the movie was too long, but then you want a more Sandy story. And it was like, I think 4 turns. So we get Thomas McKenzie's first foray into the 60s, and then she sees Sandy and she loves her and everything. That's the best scene in the movie by far. That 10-minute sequence is fucking mm-hmm. brilliant. It's phenomenal. I can't believe it exists. And then we cut back to modern day Eloise, and then we go back to Sandy, and it's the date where he takes her. He's late, but he takes her to the nightclub, and we get kind of a bad vibe, gets her the audition, and she's excited. And then they have sex, and she's like, as long as you stay with me forever. So she gives of herself. Right. And we got to, in context, unfortunately, back then that was a much bigger deal. Right. And we can tell she's a woman alone in the city, very confident, but very much vulnerable, mm-hmm. right? And then we cut back to modern day with Eloise, and then we cut back and she's just the backup dancer, right? So she's upset, but she's doing it. It's money. She probably needs to pay rent. And he's convinced her that this is just working your way up. Hey, I told you had to work the coat rack at this other place. Of course, you're willing to at least be on stage at this place. So I could see that made sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then he brings her over to the wealthy men who we presume run nightclubs of their own. And she's probably heard of this type of thing going on and said that she was too good for it. I did stuff like that myself in the drug world, right? We've already kind of seen, I think this is after the scene where we see a walkthrough of women performing sex acts and overdosing and getting high. So we see that a score of other women have fallen prey to this
right here, right after this.
Right. So we kind of get this is common, right? So it's not like she's like, oh, this is crazy. She's just like, oh, I guess me too. Right. And then, so I guess I disagree. I thought it was like we didn't have time. And I agree with you that the more, I mean, more Anya Taylor-Joy, the better. Mm-hmm. But I kind of got from the visuals, the step-by-step downfall of her dreams, right? And mm-hmm. at no point is she like, she's just pretty immediately resigned to it, which I guess is a little of what you're saying.
Very much so.
But we don't get to see that. We don't I guess I took it from the visual language, like Eloise is journeying back and who knows how many months has passed. Like we legitimately have no idea, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe she was a burlesque dancer for a month by the time Eloise sees this. Mm-hmm. It's only a shock in the first time to her, right? So maybe there's that as well. I don't know.
So I feel like,
does that make sense?
A little bit more yeah. of her. So like I do not want the movie to be longer,
right?
By any means. But I would have liked to shift the balance a little more to understanding Anya Taylor-Joy's character. So like Sandy, aside from she wants to be a singer, I don't know anything about her, which is kind of a bummer. And so in a way, aside from the fact that I love Anya Taylor-Joy, it's, and the circumstance is obviously awful. There isn't a ton of like character to back up the audience's emotional stake in her journey.
I think that's purposeful though, for that specific character.
You think?
Yeah, because you're meant to immediately like her, and we'll root for her because you want her to be successful. She's pretty, she's confident, she's likable. She wants to be a singer, and then she's thrust into this world that you're like aghast at. I think you're meant to not know that much about her. So when that turn happens, it's like, oh, we didn't really get to know who she was for real. Mm-hmm. And that feeds into the turn at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. That turn being obviously something that we haven't talked about yet. The murder that was hinted at throughout the whole movie and massively hinted at in the trailers, which was a problem advertising wise. She was the one that was killing dudes.
Yeah. So the film makes you believe that Eloise witnesses Sandy being murdered by Jack, her pimp, who hid as a manager of singers. And you are basically beat over the head with the fact that this elderly silver-haired gentleman, as he's billed, but later,
Terrence Stamp,
later revealed to be Lindsay, yeah, mm-hmm. played by Terrence Stamp, is the aged version of this character and has killed Sandy and walked free amongst London the rest of the time. And he kind of super creepy,
yeah,
like comically creepy yeah. toward Eloise, like what's up, you know? And it's like you don't get the sense.
Where are you going, girl?
You don't get the. I mean, maybe he's just like this burnt out vice cop who was mm-hmm. no angel himself. And that's kind of why he's like that, I guess. But
yeah, we don't really get to see that vice cop in his younger days, but you well, I guess
get
you
to see him for a split second.
You see him for a split second. And all you can really infer from that split second is yeah, he's probably a vice cop. Who's also probably a little shady, but also on the right side of the law technically. Cause yeah. he is kind of creepy in his one scene.
I feel like young Lindsay had to have ended up on the cutting room floor. Cause yeah. like, when Terrence Stamp's character gets hit by the car and the bartender's like, that's Lindsay. I'm like, that's who? That's Lindsay. Remember Lindsay?
Well, then they yeah, flash back to that yeah. booth and like, ah.
That one.
And so that's the part that didn't work. Like at no point did I actually think that that was him, except for fear that it really was. And then it was a really bad movie. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like when they're having the argument at the bar and like they're using dialogue that purposely makes it seem like it's about to have that reveal. I'm like, don't do it, bro. Don't do that. Because if that really is him and not a red herring, this is a problem. Like, it's a bad red herring. But if it's not a red herring, this is a really bad script, yeah. right? And of course, it's not because he's a professional. So then it is revealed that the caretaker who's renting her a room is actually
played by Diana Rigg.
Is Sandy. Yes, Dame Diana Rigg is
the Queen of Thorns.
Queen
herself.
Of Thorns herself. Is
also a former Bond girl.
Sandy, a.k.a. Alexandra. And she actually murdered all of those Johns mm-hmm. And hid them in the floorboards of the house. And eventually tries to kill Eloise because she now knows. Right. The terrible actor boy, Mike, played by Michael Zhao. Anywho, I don't know where I was going with all this, but that's the synopsis. That's mm-hmm. the turn. And that's where I started to like the movie again, is right at the end. All of the ghosts are surrounded. And that sequence was, I think, a George Romero reference. They're reaching through the floor and the windows and busting through the wall. And it's mm-hmm. kind of like cracked glass wall because it's surreal. So it's weird. They're all reaching, grasping at her. You think they're going to kill her. And then they hand her the phone, like, call the cops, but also, no, don't call the cops. Kill her. Hit her with the phone. She's super old. It shouldn't be hard.
This part of the movie was, this scene was right where the movie almost lost me, because I was enjoying it for what it was the whole time. Like, I think I'm the most positive out of all of us in here. For sure. I was just like, I'm just eating my pretzel nuggets and having a swell time. But this scene when she's running from Diana Rigg and the zombie Johns are like, they get to
very slowly up the stairs, and Diana Rigg is flashing back to becoming young Anya Taylor-Joy,
stylized,
and is singing,
yeah.
And like,
I like that. What was losing me was the slowness of it, but I'm like, okay, she's heavily drugged, she's 85, this is realistic, right?
I'm gonna get you. Here
I but come. Go on.
But no, the part when the Johns give her the phone, they're like, avenge us. I'm like, please.
Oh, yeah. I was terrified.
Make this fucking movie about avenging sex perverts because they got what was coming to them. And they like make the victim the villain of the movie. And thankfully they didn't. Like she has that moment. She's like, no, fuck you. And then she hugs Diana Rigg and is like, no, you need to live. Like, you can get past this. These people don't. They don't control you anymore. And ultimately, like, Diana Rigg is like, nah, I'll just burn up here. It's no big deal.
Yeah, she's not going to go to prison. She's not going back.
First, I can't go to prison. Tell Joffrey it was me.
I'm a dad.
Tell Cersei it was me.
I'm saying Joffrey to like.
Yeah. Fair.
I changed the character's name specifically. But no, what was my point with that? Fuck, I lost my train of thought. Anyway. Okay, I lost it. It's gone.
That's okay. We'll get it eventually.
Daenerys goes crazy and burns the city down.
Okay. Boop. So I feel like where I struggle is like the what you called the Romero reference with the hands.
I don't know if that's what it is.
The hands busting out, and maybe
it's an apt, you know.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely did the hand coming out the ground. Mm-hmm. Like, that was like, okay, obviously you're trying to make a horror movie and this is supposed to be spoopy. And I'm just like, at this point, I'm mentally disengaged from the idea of it being a horror movie. And now I feel like I'm shitting all over it. And it probably
sounds like
But I actually did have a lot of fun with tons of parts of it.
I think you are the biggest schlock horror fan. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. Like, you like the most horror movie. You watch more horror than either of us combined. Right. And you cannot let go that this is not an effective horror film, mm-hmm. right? And that's the lens through which you're viewing, which is a totally valid take. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, like, I think that's the disconnect. Sure. Whereas, like, Steve or I were like, weren't scared either. Don't give a fuck. Didn't want to be.
Go ahead. I was gonna say, like, I am. You know, I obviously am not the biggest horror fan at all of all of us. But I love thrillers, and there was a lot of, I thought, very, very good scenes in this movie.
It was thrilling.
Where it was high tension, where I was like on the edge of my seat. Like, oh, what's happening? Ooh, like there's a scene when her boyfriend and her. Thomas and Mackenzie's character are about to do it.
John, bed, I think.
And she sees the big vision and of Sandy being stabbed at the same time. That to me was like super.
Oh my God. That was terrible.
I was like, oh my God. Oh, this is an awful situation. Oh, get out. I can look away. Oh, don't do that. And they kept doing it.
Yeah.
But it's stuff like that where I felt the tension and the thrill,
sure.
But I wasn't necessarily like scared or anything.
Right.
I hope that seems fair. Like, I'm not reducing your criticism. I just think that's the mental block.
Well, it's not just to me that it wasn't an effective horror film. It also wasn't an effective Edgar Wright film. Mm-hmm. His scripts are normally air fucking tight. And everything that ever happens at any point has been foreshadowed 1,000 times over early on. There's no fucking Chekhov's gun. Or what is a Chekhov's gun?
Yeah, there is a Chekhov's gun. Yeah.
Okay. There's no fucking Chekhov's gun that doesn't get fired for Edgar Wright. Like, if you go back and like rewatch Hot Fuzz 1,000 times, like we have, like everything that happens, he has set up 1,000 times over, and you can look back.
You've never seen Bad Boys 2.
And you can look back.
And then they watch Bad Boys 2, you know? I'm just kidding.
Chekhov's Bad Boys 2.
Well, this was co-written. I forget her name. I just named her at the the young lady. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that he had a woman's perspective for this subject matter.
That's important.
God. Sure. That's why Simon Pegg was not the co-writer, I'm sure.
Right.
But maybe that's what it is. I mean, there's a little bit of extra flavor we normally don't get. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. There's some more flaws script-wise than there typically are in an Edgar Wright film. I'm curious where this would rank for you or even I.
On an Edgar Wright list?
I'll start. Because I've never seen Fistful of Fingers.
Okay.
I would have to say it is probably, I don't know, Hot Fuzz.
As number one?
Number one. Baby Driver. I know that's controversial. Shaun of the Dead. Scott Pilgrim. Last Night in Soho. And then The World's End. And I know that that's...
I'm probably very similar to yours. I would put this above At World's End, but
is it At World's End?
No, that's Pirates of the Caribbean.
I always do that. It's At World's
End. It's the World's End.
Yeah, I always do the Pirates of the Caribbean title. I saved myself that time, but not at the beginning of this episode. But anyway,
I would put it just above The World's End, and then all the other movies above it. But I still really love those movies. I just don't really like The World's End.
I don't either. But it's a lot of really smart film critics think it's the best of the Cornetto trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like the most mature themed. And it's not funny.
I would put The World's End above this. This would probably be my. And I'm going to say again, I liked this movie. I just did not love it. And
sure.
every other Edgar Wright movie I have loved. And that's a big part of why I think I'm shitting on it.
I literally, not literally, but I had metaphorically written this in as my favorite movie of the year.
Yeah,
same. A year ago.
Same.
And it is not that. So that is true. Mm-hmm. However, I think over time, this will become better and better. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those movies.
I want to watch it a second time to see if I can pick up on
Edgar Wright-y stuff.
Like, yeah, I bet that there are some more like subtle.
I caught a couple, but I bet there's a ton more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, that sequence where she first throws the blanket over her head that first night in that
the
apartment.
Camera pulls away from her.
And you got the sign, the Italian sign, flickering different colors. It's beautifully mm-hmm. shot. The camera pulls away, and it becomes this surreal, lengthened cave. And it reminds me of some of the surreal scenes from Across the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody else watched that.
The Jim Sturgis.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yes. Yeah. And more importantly,
Bonham.
yes. Nailed it. So anyway,
tell me I'm not number two.
And then it cuts away into like a bunch of visually shit I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And extremely impressive camera work. And then, you know, Anya Taylor-Joy was the perfect cast because she's just like a goddess, right? Mm-hmm. It just seems otherworldly, and you can see how Eloise would fall immediately in love. And it does wonders for her character. She builds confidence. She buys the old 1960s jacket. And I said last night, I wanted to see more of that. Like where I thought this movie was going to go was that she would learn things successively, visit after visit, from this other woman and start to take charge of her own life mm-hmm. in a more visible way. Like, you know, tell Jocasta to, you know, suck her dick, which is what I really wanted.
For
like,
sure.
Hey, suck my dick. Get off
so
my coke.
Brave. Yeah. So brave.
But she, you know, Jocasta never gets a real comeuppance. She's just kind of a hater.
That's yeah. another, I think there probably is a deleted scene where she does.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I 100% agree. I would have liked to have seen more character development of Thomas McKenzie's character as a result of her experiences in the past. Essentially, all that we really get from her is like that is any kind of positive is she really liked that dress from that first time she saw her. And now that's her thesis or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like instead of going and learning something with each successive visit, every time she visits, it just starts to dominate her life in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
Like instead of learning things every time she comes back from sleeping, her life is just more and more insane because now she's seeing shit in her day to day and looking like a crazy person. And she seems to have found all the eyeshadow in London.
Right.
And if they wasn't so wrapped up in, like I said, I was doing a horror film.
Yeah.
You know, the script, sure. I think would have been better. Just do your thing. If it was, it doesn't have to be super funny. Like Baby Driver is pretty funny, but it's also a departure from what he had been doing. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, if you were in Baby Driver territory, even
love action, Baby Driver.
This would, yeah, he is the most musical director. He's never done a musical, but he's one of the most musical directors
really
on the planet.
He really should. How about Matt Smith fucking killing it as Jack?
Yeah, I hated him, so that was effective.
Yeah, he. I thought that he.
Matt Smith's really good at playing assholes.
Perfect, like mix of like initially charming and in a bad boy way, and then ultimately pretty villain, not villainous, not pretty villainous, extremely villainous, but like, it, but still just in
a
this like
cunt with a capital C.
Right, right. He kills it at that, and like I and this is
I'm so handsome, I can probably get you a job.
You can't see it, listener, but Chris is trying to will his forehead to be larger so that he can mimic Matt Smith better.
He's very, I bet if he did my 23andMe, he would have like 33% Neanderthal DNA.
I think he's a handsome man. I really do.
He's your favorite doctor over fucking David Tennant.
He is my favorite
doctor.
That's
crazy.
Did you know, I didn't remember this until I was kind of researching stuff for the tonight's episode, but I had totally forgotten that there's an episode of Doctor Who where Matt Smith plays opposite of Diana Rigg. She's the Mr. Sweets lady.
Mr. Sweets.
Everyone.
She's got like a candy store, but like there's like a parasite on her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Every UK actor is in Doctor Who, especially if they were in Game of Thrones.
Right. Yeah. 100%.
Is Terrence Stamp in Doctor Who?
I would bet my life.
Yeah. Every actor in this movie is some form of a United Kingdom cinema hero. Even the guy that I hate, Michael Ojeau. I don't hate him as a person. I just didn't like this performance. I don't want to make that clear.
Well, yeah, that performance was.
He was in Attack the Block. Have you guys seen that indie film?
No, but I really want to.
Attack the Block's dope.
Yeah, so that's where he came from, and I really respected that nod as well.
Yeah, that his acting was not good in this movie. This movie's so well cast. There's so many great actors in this, just crushing every scene. And then you got this poor guy that's like, "Oh, I'm here to help." Oh, I am?
I really think, well, here's the, oh, I just thought of something that made me feel like an asshole. I think, because he's a really nice guy, right? Like, to a point that bothered me. Mm-hmm. I think it's meant to offset the fact that every other male in this movie is actively terrible.
Well, yeah.
Right?
That's that he's too nice?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like a juxtaposition against a bunch of rapists and just leering, jaded cops and things like that.
I think it's a combination of that for sure, I think is what they're trying to get across with him. But also they have to make it, this guy has to be awkward, socially awkward enough to where he can realistically be into Thomas and Mackenzie's socially awkwardness, because she's an incredibly socially awkward character as well.
Which is fine, so but he tolerates like legitimate dangerous behavior.
No, yeah, he absolutely does.
You try to stab her in the face with scissors. You're such a silly girl.
But I think if you had a... It's okay.
You need to... You're so stressed.
Come on, love, I got tea.
Just stay right there. It's like, no, get the fuck out of that library.
I love that part when she almost stabs Jocasta in the face and he stops her and he's like, it's all right. And she's, and Jocasta's like, no, it's fucking she's not.
Right. Also, your reflexes are impressive.
It's like the most genuine reaction to anything in a movie ever.
Right.
No, it's fucking not.
Me and Chris were joking about the reflexes on the drive home. Like, did you fucking see what I just did? I grabbed that shit.
I'm the British Miles Morales with my spider sense. Wah! She was like, yeah. And I was like, pacha. One thing I did want to kind of mention before, as you know, Diana Rigg passed away. So this movie was finished in like 2019. It was supposed to come out.
Yes.
Around 2019, but yes. It kept getting delayed because of COVID, obviously. And Diana
Rigg. It was never a Halloween movie. He actually joked, well, there's a Halloween party in it, so it's a Halloween movie. We're going to release it on October 29th. I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, there's a Halloween.
It makes sense to me now because I read that tweet 6 months ago.
But Diana Rigg passed away September 9th.
Yes.
September 10th, 2020. And the first thing you see in the movie is it says for Diana. Yeah. What we all miss, but I found out later, was Margaret Nolan also passed away on October 5th, 2020. And she has a memorandum in the end credits.
Oh, wow.
So Diana Rigg has hers in the beginning and Margaret Nolan's is in the end credits.
Oh, shit.
R.I.P. Legendary Dames.
This is just the movie of dead people. Now it is spooky.
It really is spooky. Mm-hmm.
So all in all, I think we all recommend that you go support and see Edgar Wright's newest foray.
Absolutely. Just don't go into it with the fucking idea of it being a horror film. And I think you'll have a lot better time.
Sure. Similar things have happened in the past. Movies like Crimson Peak, you know. Mm-hmm. Any hoozle. That's all we have to say, I think, about Last Night in Soho. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
Happy streaming. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.